The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight to discuss what we've been watching. Number six in this series is Brian Hartman.
That's me.
And Phil Carone.
Hi, friends.
So we're just going to jump right in with Annihilation. It's something I recently saw. This is the latest movie from Alex Garland, who most recently directed Ex Machina, but has also directed previous sci-fi classics of the 21st century, like Sunshine and 28 Days Later. Not directed, but he wrote those. Sunshine and 28 Days Later. And
I didn't know he did 28 Days Later. That's so good.
He did indeed. And Danny Boyle directing both of those movies. Sunshine is sensational. Annihilation is... It's hard to find a way into this movie. It's very cerebral, I think. It's pretty difficult, I think, based on its box office returns. And I am really intrigued by it. I feel like it requires multiple viewings to really wrap your head around what it's about. Superficially, it's about some kind of world that is radiating out after a meteor strike. And Natalie Portman, her character, is recruited to investigate after her husband, played by Oscar Isaac, returns to their home despite being gone with no contact for a year. And she is put with a team of other scientists, researchers. She's a cell biologist, and hilarity ensues. It's a strange movie. I think its reach exceeds its grasp by a fair amount. If I had to tell you what it was about, I would say it's about apoptosis, which is a fun biological term for programmed cell death, in which, say, a cell accumulates too many cancerous mutations, and it decides through various chemical signatures within and without the cell that it's going to self-immolate. It's going to light itself on fire. It's going to jump off a cliff to save the other cells around it. And this is in the movie. I'm not just making that up. But
it sounds made up.
It does, 100%.
It's a very fun word, apoptosis. But it tickled my biological funny bone. For those who listen to our Stranger Things podcast, it's right in the neighborhood of are viruses alive or not.
Nothing will compare to viruses being alive.
Well, because that was deeply stupid of the show that that put forth the idea that they were so aggressively and without contest.
Did you find anything in Annihilation to be deeply stupid?
I wouldn't go that far. I think in the vein of something like 2001, once you pass a certain scientific threshold, you can pretty much do whatever you want. And Sunshine very much did the same thing. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that this movie goes off the rails as they get closer to the meteor site.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of crazy fun stuff happens. I think there's a lot of Arrival in this movie too, in that it grounds a lot of the sci-fi stuff with the personal trauma of Natalie Portman's character, who for over the past year has been dealing with both the absence of her husband and then his presumed death, and now all of a sudden he's back, or is he? This is happening while she's entering this force field where genes are being re-edited from various different species and smooshed together into very strange and creative animals and plants.
Mm. I think the Arrival analogy is really good. I liked it better than Arrival because Arrival got into the whole like militaristic people have no brains, just kill attitude.
And some of that's in Annihilation.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like there are many, there are five women that go into this force field, and they have different approaches to how they would like to deal with it.
I was wondering about the character you're talking about, where they just want to like shoot the thing up.
Sure.
I felt like that like developed, and it was part of like that character's cell refraction and whatever was going on in their DNA. Because I feel like no one went in with the idea of just blowing it to smithereens.
How spoiler are you getting here?
Let's go for it.
Okay. So you are obviously talking about Gina Rodriguez, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That was the one character that did not work for me in this whole movie. I didn't think she really served a lot of a purpose except kind of plot device-y. I thought all the other characters had some very fitting moments on their progression.
Right. I didn't understand why she was even there in the first place.
She was a paramedic.
Yeah, she was a paramedic.
A paramedic. That, I know that doesn't fit. The other people had MBAs, PhDs, years of life experience.
She was there to get them tied up in a chair for a bear to sniff them. That's what she was there to do.
I think it was the only one with any kind of hands-on medical experience. Why they went for a medic instead of, like, a trauma surgeon. Because, like, Tessa Thompson plays a physicist. Natalie Portman is a cell biologist. I don't remember what the Norwegian woman was. And Jennifer Jason Leigh was on, like, a suicide mission. And she's also, like, a high-up military official as well.
She's a psychiatrist.
So, yeah, she's the outlier, Gina Rodriguez, no question. I don't think that takes away from how awesome she, like, I don't watch Jane the Virgin, but I certainly had it in my head that this must be the polar opposite of that character. As far as her specific character and the way she reacts, I'm going to force this movie into a cell biology box and say that the movie is about cells as individual entities. And obviously we think of people as individual entities, even though they are part of the whole, and consciousness is just, not consciousness, but like bodily autonomy even, is like an illusion that our brain projects. Like our bodies only end at the surface of our skin because our brain is constructing a reality where that is true. And it's all a big swirling soup of molecules, and something that this DNA cloud or whatever is doing is turning animal and plant into one undifferentiated mass.
Well, Kissel, did you find it interesting that, and I just noticed this as the movie's gone, because, you know, the whole movie, you keep talking about cell death and whatnot.
Sure.
The whole movie is just rife with lush greenery and life and just things springing up everywhere. And the only traces of death you ever actually see are human remains. I think the whole point of it is that it's about accepting this, I guess, convergence of energy is the best way to put it. And I think that what they're saying is part of the human condition is the inability to accept not being dominant, almost, is maybe the best way to put it.
Yes, and that's the other part of Rodriguez's arc, is that she refuses to accept this.
Yes.
Whereas acceptance is not a prerequisite. It's happening.
Which, like, is Natalie Portman's is also the same, but yeah, Tessa, go for it.
Specifically Tessa Thompson, who just decides to walk off into the wilderness and then disappear and become, I don't know, part of the world.
Right, and I don't know about you all, but I actually looked up the definition of annihilation after the movie.
Oh.
Oh, I did too.
So there is the obvious definition, which is complete destruction or obliteration.
Okay.
But there is a definition that I did not know. And that is the conversion of matter into energy, especially the mutual conversion of a particle and an antiparticle into electromagnetic radiation. And I think that definition is what the movie is about.
Sure.
About this, especially when Jennifer Jason Leigh's character is having her whatever speech and turns into a ball of energy. I think that whole speech actually means.
I don't remember too much of that. I would have to consult my notes that I wrote down after I saw it, but sure. Yeah, all that seems fine. I think in relation to Sunshine, where there is so much awe before the universe, that's very much here as well. And we're really revisiting that with Annihilation. Just awe before this change versus resistance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll fully co-sign with your statement, Phil, as far as humans won't see themselves as the prime movers, and when in fact the universe is impartial and these changes are happening, whether we want them to or not.
Did anyone think there was a divine element to it?
Fuck no.
The only reason I ask is because for the two flashback scenes, which I don't think were just put there for no reason, one of the scenes is specifically about God. Why was that scene there then?
I don't remember what scene you're talking
about. I don't remember it either.
You all suck. I was really thinking a lot about the flashback scenes, especially because there was the one about that and the one about specifically aging being a genetic flaw.
Sure. What does that have to do with?
I don't know.
Religious. I think it's just a statement.
I don't know what those scenes were there for, and I think they matter. I don't think a scene doesn't.
Sure. Matter. Absolutely. I think every scene matters in this movie, but like as far as I do remember the aging aside.
Right.
That's just about how I think, again, like hubris in the face of our obvious genetic flaws. And I mean, if enough time went by in the sphere, probably things aren't aging because that's an easy fix to make.
Right. And I think that is the case, especially with you see some of the copies that exist, like those, like the two deer that are the two mm-hmm. white deer. I mean, they're identical, but one of those deer is probably significantly older than the other one.
Yeah.
Just because we know how the copying works by the end.
I'm going to ask you a question before I tell you my answer, because I won't change my answer on this one. Why do you think the sphere was expanding?
No idea.
I think they were trying to make they made the allegory to cancer pretty overt from the word go. I think it had something to do with that, just to kind of give an idea of it starts very small and it just keeps expanding very slowly. And just to give it an idea of what could eventually happen. But I think that's it.
I don't have a sense of that thematically, but to push back against Phil's interpretation, like cancer is malevolent. Whereas
right,
this
which is why I don't think
not necessarily malevolent. It's malevolent
I think it's
in the sense of you are going to lose your individuality.
Right. I think it's almost like a foil, which doesn't work great in this situation, but that's just the best word I can come up with.
Yeah.
See, I tied it in. This is about as deep as I get with movies. And I was also had a fever, so I could have been half hallucinating. So like we talked earlier about being dead in the sphere. And I took it as like they were the only people that would fight back. We were the only thing fighting against it. And I feel like every time we sent something in or were fighting against the sphere, it used that energy to grow. That was my big philosophy on what was going on.
Yeah, maybe.
My favorite thing about this movie is I've talked to about 10 different people about it and heard 10 different theories, and I can't totally say that any of them are wrong.
It's about apoptosis.
Shut up.
Let's let Phil wrap it up before we move on.
My favorite image of 2018 will almost certainly be the image of the guy who burst apart, clearly, with just that crazy, almost mural that he created.
Yeah. Surely you have played Dead Space, Phil?
I haven't. I don't play horror games.
Okay, that's shocking to me, but there's a lot of Dead Space in that image, I thought.
Okay.
Where I was thinking just like this body horror, Lovecraftian space
fair,
horror.
Fair.
Where and just I, human I mean, beings I was kind are of being thinking exploded all over walls and reorienting themselves in new and fun ways.
Right. And I think my favorite scene of 2018 will probably end up being the bear scene.
Okay.
I love crazy tense scenes. But anyway.
Some of the one in the house or the first one?
The one in the house.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was a great scene.
Yeah, it's a good-looking bear. Brian, what have you been watching?
I watched a couple nights ago, I watched 13 Assassins, which is on Netflix, probably. It's a Japanese movie.
Sure.
Having watched Silence, this one was – I was able to get into this one quite a bit more, even though it's not the same philosophical movie at all. But the first half is build-up. The last half is all action, some of which is incredibly choreographed, and some of it is like just over-the-top action movie. And I love over-the-top action movie, so I'd recommend it. If you can do subtitles, it's definitely worth watching.
And you should be able to do subtitles because you're an adult listener, and it shouldn't be that much to ask.
Some people just don't want to do titles.
Silly.
I agree.
Honestly, like I think you could probably watch it without subtitles, and it would be worth watching.
Okay, I haven't seen it, but it has been on my radar for some time. Takashi Miike is the director of that. He recently put out his 100th movie that he's directed, and this was just last year with Blade of the Immortal, which is like a 2.5-hour several hundred casualty movie.
This is similar.
He's also done Audition, which is a horror movie that perhaps Phil has seen.
Nope.
Okay.
That's over two. Over two over on two. Phil predictions.
Audition is much like 13 Assassins, it sounds like, where it starts as one thing and becomes something very, very different by the end. And I would strongly recommend it.
Oh, 13 Assassins. You know what's happening the whole time. Okay. No doubt about it. It's a pure action revenge movie. They're just building to it and then going for it.
Okay. It might come up in one of our future trios because I have long wanted to see to see 13 Assassins.
To have an excuse to put together a good trio. I understand.
Wow.
Stop it.
I just Googled Audition. I am shocked I haven't seen this.
I think you would really like it, Phil. But in the meantime, well, what else have you been watching?
So I recently went and saw the Jennifer Lawrence spy thriller Red Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
It is a slow, uncomfortable movie.
Clocking in at an hour 40 minutes. Or, excuse me, 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, hour 40 and it's slow. That's not...
Oh, no. It is a full 2 hours and 20 minutes. And it's one of those things. So it's a movie based on a book. And when you base a movie on a book, you either cut out a whole bunch of it or you keep it all and fly through it. I think Red Sparrow did the latter, and that was a mistake.
How much time goes by in this movie? How many years?
Undetermined. I would guess probably less than a year.
Really? That's maybe. Shocking.
I can't tell. It's one of those things. It does one of those things I can't stand, which is the rookie spy who is uber competent.
Yeah, like I've seen the trailers before every movie I've seen over the last like 2 months, and it very much seems like training, getting better, getting great, and then having some crisis of conscience. But if it takes place over a year, then yeah, that's dumb.
I don't even think it's that. Yes, it is. I don't believe the entire action of the movie is very long. It doesn't really try to clarify the time period. Brian, this is not a you movie because this movie really does not have any action. The most action-packed scenes are when she's a ballerina at the beginning.
First of all, I don't only watch action movies. Second of all, Chelsea and I saw the preview for this before Black Panther, and we both looked at each other and said, that looks really dumb. But can continue.
I think the trailers look great.
Oh, gosh, no. Well, I thought it looked terrible. I thought it looked like cheesy, bad action.
It's not action. It's basically talking. And
yeah. It looks like The Americans to me, but just done up in a much more fancy way.
Thought it looked like done up in a worse way.
Like, I don't think she's not an Atomic Blonde type. She's a honeypot. She's having sex with people to get information out of them.
100%. That is the movie.
Okay.
And I'm not going to go too much into the second half of it. Yeah, but overall, I saw it with my wife. She called it one of the most uncomfortable movies she's ever been in. She's ever watched in a theater for sure. So put that out there. It was,
you're really at a loss for words here.
I just don't have anything else to describe.
What was your grade? I just want a grade at this point.
C minus.
Oh gosh.
Okay. I'm at a B for Annihilation, by the way.
I'm at a B+.
Oh, I forget. I was at B or B+ when I.
I've talked myself down today. A little bit.
I'm hovering in that area between. If there's like a B+.
Range, I want to watch it again first.
Cardinal directions.
Yeah. I want to watch it again before really. But I don't need to watch Red Sparrow again. Honestly, if I watched it again, it'd probably drop it more.
Okay. I have been watching a movie called Game Night from John. Crap. I can't remember his name. He played the little kid in Freaks and Geeks. John Francis Daly, maybe? I don't know. Who cares? And his writing partner. They had previously written the Horrible Bosses movies. And they made the Vacation, the National Lampoon's Vacation remake with Ed Helms. So I didn't have tremendous expectations going in, but it was well reviewed. And I'm happy to say that it was actually really good. I don't think there's been a lot of very good comedies over the last few years. with a handful of exceptions, and I think you have to go fairly indie to get to those exceptions. Like Taika Waititi, his movies are obviously hilarious, and
Popstar is the best comedy I've seen in theaters in the last like 2-3 years.
100%, and that was a complete failure. And I'm not saying Game Night's making a shit ton of money, but there haven't been like big popular comedies. Like there's like Girls' Night that would count, but people like Will Ferrell that used to be somewhat reliable have really turned into a phase of their career. And Game Night is a bit of a return to form for the genre. It's about Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams. They play husband and wife, and they're a very competitive couple. And they have game nights with their group of friends. And Jason Bateman's older brother, who has always been the cock of the walk during their whole life, he's beaten Jason Bateman's character in everything. He's played by Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights. He shows up, and he's very wealthy, and he just raises the stakes, and it goes from there. And as an action movie, because things do start to escalate after a certain point, I thought it was really impressive. Car chases, fist fights, a little bit of gunplay. I thought that was shockingly competent. Better even than a movie we're going to talk about here shortly, Phil. And there's a lot of funny moments in it. Rachel McAdams is really... Game Night reiterates how underused she is. Like, you think about the time she wasted on True Detective Season 2, where she was just the most dour and serious person, when in Game Night she is having a blast just waving a gun around, threatening thugs that she doesn't think are real thugs when they're actually, or she thinking they're actors, and whatever, here nor there. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of good bit players. Lamorne Morris, who plays Winston on A New Girl, he's got a strong side plot in Game Night. Jesse Plemons from Breaking Bad and Friday Night Lights has a really strong role. It's a very fun movie that I would recommend to anyone. Game Night. Brian, what else have you been watching?
I just finished Darkest Hour.
Okay.
With Gary Oldman. A lot of talking.
Yep.
I feel like Darkest Hour and Dunkirk propped each other up this year in the whole awards thing.
There was actually a third movie about Dunkirk that flew under the radar. It was like the propaganda push following Dunkirk.
Right. I feel like without each other, neither's really that great. They seeing both of them, you get a better understanding of what was going on and that time and place, and it was fine, but it's not groundbreaking in any way. And I didn't think, I mean, his performance was good, but I wouldn't say it was the best performance I saw of the year.
Neither would I. It's like a very standard biopic.
I heard someone say the makeup was the best performer, was the best actor.
I do think Gary Oldman was very good, and I think Ben Mendelsohn, MMC favorite Ben Mendelsohn, was also very good as the king. But I don't know. I mean, like, I listened to that speech, the Fight on the Beaches speech, after I saw Darkest Hour, and it is not delivered the way Gary Oldman delivers it. It's a political speech. He may as well be giving it from like an easy chair. He's not yelling and pounding the desk. It sounds like he's reading off a piece of paper. And that difference between real life and the movie, I think, kind of treats the audience like morons. And I what's best about Darkest Hour for me was just the way that it shows you how lonely leadership can be. There's a lot of very evocative shots of Winston Churchill, like, going down in an elevator by himself, or in a room talking with FDR on the phone, like, begging for help. And I like, those are the most successful parts of the movie, and they don't have to be about Dunkirk. It can be just about any political figure in charge during a tumultuous period, running up against the limitations of his office.
Not seeing this, can I make a weird comparison?
Sure.
This sounds like what I was worried Lincoln was going to be.
It's not as good as Lincoln.
100%. I would 100% agree with that.
Because, like, one of the things I was worried about with Lincoln is they were going to totally screw up what Abraham Lincoln was actually like. And, you know, it seemed like they did their research, and, like, Daniel Day-Lewis actually had that weird accent that Lincoln actually had. But it sounds like they didn't really – they just made a movie it sounds like they just kind of tried to get Gary Oldman an Oscar, and, you know, good for him.
There's a couple of real clunkers in Darkest Hour. I'm thinking particularly of a scene on a subway or the 1940s equivalent of a subway.
That was so cheesy.
Yeah. It's a flawed movie with some really good stuff. Like, Joe Wright is the director who did Atonement. And speaking of Dunkirk, and Hannah and Anna Karenina. He's like a very visually inventive director.
Didn't he direct Pan?
Yes.
You're welcome.
Okay, well done. Phil, what else have you been watching?
I saw the movie that has made $500 million, Black Panther. I don't think Black Panther is as good as Civil War, but I do think it's one of the better Marvel movies. I would say it's third.
Civil War. Yikes.
Oh, Civil.
Here or there. Here or there.
Are we doing this again?
We're not.
This was way better than Civil War.
Oh.
Phil, go ahead with what you were saying. Calm down, Joe.
No. But I did love Black Panther. That was a great movie. I thought it had some of the best. Definitely has the best villain in Marvel history. We'll get to that more later. I just wanted to throw it out there first. Great side characters. Couple really cool scenes. Like, I'm just assuming everyone listening to this has seen it. Probably it's made $500 million. So I'm not going to really spoil the movie. I've been saying for a while, like, the Marvel movies have been doing a lot more interesting things than just being superhero movies. This one does some really interesting stuff about, you know, the politics of this fictitious nation of Wakanda. And
you
I mean
the suburb of Chicago?
What?
There's a town in Illinois that has the same name but spelled differently. It's this little, like, podunk town in the exurb of Chicago.
Well, it's not real then. The same place.
How are their vibranium reserves?
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought it did some really cool stuff, and I thought it was better. It did a lot more than it had any expectation to do, honestly. You know, delving into xenophobia and whatnot.
I disagree with that statement. Like, Marvel has been, as you said, raising their game over the last year, year and a half.
It's true, but I didn't expect him to go
in this whole phase three. I would say everything after
everything since Civil
Age
War.
Of Ultron, I would say.
Yeah, Civil War is when phase three started, and ever since then, yeah. The only one that really isn't doing a whole lot super interesting is Doctor Strange.
Yes, I would. That's a bog standard origin story, and I think that is Black Panther's greatest asset, is that it is essentially able to be an origin story, at least for this specific and presumably lengthy phase of T'Challa's life. Like, he obviously, you know, did all his training beforehand, but.
Yeah,
it's the most effective at introducing new characters, making those new characters people you are interested in. The person whose name I don't remember who plays M'Baku, the head of the Mountain Tribe, and Letitia Wright, who plays again, I don't remember anyone's names from this movie. Thank you, Brian.
No, that's fair.
The disease is spreading.
T'Challa's sister, she's mostly unknown.
Sure. Yeah, I remember her name.
Okay, and they're arguably the best characters in the movie, even with Michael B. Jordan and Lupita Nyong'o.
And Daniel Kaluuya?
Kaluuya, yeah.
Kaluuya, yeah.
Also, I mean, it's a pretty standard role, but he invested with a lot of gravitas and old pros like Angela Bassett and Forest Whitaker. I mean, they have less to do, but they still make an impression. And I think I had high expectations for the action thanks to Creed, Ryan Coogler's last movie, and I was fairly let down by it. I mean,
totally agree.
It is a superhero movie, and there are expectations that go with that as far as, like, the thrill ride aspect. And I think the script is a lot better than that action directing.
Yes.
With the exception of the casino scene and the car chase that follows after. I thought those were strong.
The final, you know, of course, there's a final battle scene. Mm-hmm. Not particularly great. And especially when you consider some of the other, again, I gotta go back to Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is really the only other phase movie that has been a little subpar in that department. And this one definitely was the case there.
Yeah, I think the imagination is there in both of those movies, but it's just lacking in execution.
Yeah, agreed. Coming off of Thor Ragnarok especially, which has some spectacles.
Yes, there are shots in Thor Ragnarok that they stop the movie to let the audience take it in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt the movie at all, in my mind. It's totally worth it. They're right to do it.
Oh, 100%. Oh, God.
And I don't think there's anything quite like that in Black Panther. And like, it is a thematically rich movie. And
yes,
it was a lot of fun to see that in a packed theater in Atlanta. People were very engaged with the movie, and seeing children taking pictures with the stand-ins after was really nice. It is, despite it being a superhero movie, yeah, it is a movie that matters, but I don't want to rain anyone's parade. I mean, it is a good movie. I thought it was like a B+. I just had really high expectations going again.
Yeah, I think I was an A after watching it initially, and I think I'm down to an A- because it's more so those just technical aspects that mm-hmm. I go in expecting to be, you know, when you look at the pedigree that the Marvel has, and, you know, part of it is they can't really, you know, necessarily just keep topping themselves, but mm-hmm. they didn't.
I have so many questions about, like, the world of the movie, too. Like, who in Wakanda draws the short straw and has to fool the rest of the world that it's a third world country that just exports, what is Martin Freeman, like, beads and cool outfits? Like, do they rotate?
I don't know.
Someone's keeping up this facade. Like, the land is real. The land doesn't have a force field over it.
Right.
Someone has to live there. And that's just they one did, question they, of many.
There was an offhanded comment about an impenetrable jungle.
I mean, I feel like there are shots.
I mean, was the movie glossing over how no one knows about this.
That was
one line.
And that was definitely the implication at the end of Civil War, but they kind of toss it aside a little bit.
And there is, at one point, someone lives outside of that force field. Like
the poor people do.
It's not like Wakanda isn't the city. It's a country.
Right.
In my understanding, and some of that country is penetrable. So, one question.
Right. It was the guy from Get Out has his, like, subsistence farming, or what is their show of subsistence farming going on outside of the jungle?
His hire actors.
Maybe.
Can I say something as an outsider to the MCU? Because I'm just not that into it. I'm working on it. I thought about that for a while. Every time Stan Lee shows his face in one of these movies, I am drawn out of the universe of MCU just roll my eyes. It's so silly.
No,
I mean, the movies aren't supposed to be taken seriously. Well, this one kind of is. But it's just like, if you're going to engage me in a movie, don't, like, yank me out of it for 30 seconds to go, look at Stan Lee. And well, put me right back in it.
It's just a dumb gag at this point. Who cares?
I mean, it is dumb.
But, I mean, it's in the casino scene.
As far as the many Stan Lee cameos that we've had by now, I feel like he spoke a little longer in this one. Yeah. So, there's something to that.
I feel like...
It's very good. It's definitely a top-tier Marvel movie.
I would agree with that. I don't feel like the action was super fun or dramatic, but it told a really good story compared to the other Marvel movies.
Yeah, the best part of the action is, like, what are they going to pull out next? And they do keep revealing new weapons and technology as the movie continues. Like, right up until the end, they're doing that. So I think that's what most recommends the viewer to the action part of it. But, like, as far as people actually fighting or anything like that, just not as much.
Yeah, and in the greater universe, it's cool to see that this country is probably going to have a very big role in what is to come in Infinity War.
Sure. Last thing for me, I just finished watching Mayhem, which is a movie from last year starring Steven Yeun from formerly from The Walking Dead. It's 28 days later in a corporate law office. Like, there is a rage virus that exists in the world. It infects this corporate law office, and this happens just as Steven Yeun is fired unjustly by the corrupt management during a period of quarantine in which it's been established that you're not responsible for your crimes. So there's that purge aspect as well, and he sets off to go after the board. It's like, it's a quick 80 minutes. It's from Joe Lynch, who did a really shit upon movie called Knights of Badassdom, which is about LARPers who have to fight actual demons, which was fun. A great cast. Peter Dinklage was in that. And it doesn't get its tone exactly right. Like, everyone in the law is infected with this virus the entire time, but that doesn't mean that they don't still take time to have heart-to-heart conversations and build the characters up a little bit when you like ranting and raving and in what's the equivalent of like a coke-fueled rampage. And it's just inconsistent in that way, but when it does really get going, it's just a fun B movie mayhem.
It sounds like the Belko experiment.
I don't know what that is. I certainly remember hearing about it, but I have no sense of it beyond the name. It's very homage-y and pastiche-y. I think that's the way that Joe Lynch operates. It's like a wannabe cult filmmaker. Phil, last thing for you?
Last thing for me. I saw Lady Bird right before the Oscars.
Sure. How, on the scale of 9 to 10, how robbed was it at the Oscars, would you say? I'll say 10.
I'll say, well, what should it have won?
Certainly supporting actress.
Okay.
Arguably best actress. Original screenplay.
Okay.
And best picture would have been a tough sell, but I certainly wouldn't have been opposed.
Okay, well, you're incorrect on almost all of those. Lady Bird, it was good. I thought it would work better on me because, one, I mean, I'm that exact same age. I graduated from high school in 2003 also. I went to a Catholic high school also. So it definitely was a lot of stuff I recognized. Dave Matthews, of course.
Sure.
Had to be playing.
State of California.
The state of California, where I'm from.
Having sex with Timothy Chalamet for the first time.
Having sex with Timothy Chalamet, sure. That was who I lost my virginity 100%. No, but so thematically,
He was three in 2003. You got you on tape, Bill.
Oh, God. No!
Go ahead.
No. But anyway.
Get your thoughts out before they knock on your door.
Okay. All right. I got to move quick here. I don't know. I think I expected more, and I thought it was really good, but it wasn't great. I don't know. It's a B plus.
Is that a question of high expectations?
Maybe.
Supported, or do you have like ammo behind that assertion?
It just was. It was a character study where just a lot of things, where there's a lot of shit happened, and I get the point of it, and it was great. Whatever, fine. But I feel like I've seen that movie so many times that.
Let me tell you, Phil, as someone who has a lot of indie movies on their radar at any given moment, I have seen that movie dozens of times just because how much money does it really take to show a teenager realizing something? And this is the best possible version of it. But myself and Brian have discussed Lady Bird on the podcast in our Best of 2017, where Lady Bird occupies a high spot. It was number two on my list. Check out our Best of tag on Side Pieces at MunichMovie.club.
That's what you're talking about.
They will but, now.
Yes. Great, great movie. I think I believe you're as high on it as I was, Brian. Is that correect?
Yeah, because we fought about whose side we were on, the mom or the daughter.
I was on the mom's.
And I was on the daughters. How about this, John? If they made this movie in the 80s, everyone would just wax sentimental about how it rings of their childhood. And it would become a cult classic.
Critics love this movie, irrespective of the decade. But it may still reach that cult classic. Once the next generation comes online and figures out, once they find this movie, they'll be all over it, I think. Hopefully it supplants The Breakfast Club as like a coming-of-age movie worthy of admiration. And you want to wrap us up?
I watched Mudbound. Has anybody else seen Mudbound?
I haven't. I haven't.
Nope.
No excuse. Yeah.
Also a Netflix movie about a family and their servants, former slaves, and racism in the South. And it's really, really well done. America is a terribly depressing place. So there you go.
This is in the 50s, is that correct?
World War II and post-War II.
Okay.
So, that time period, 40s, yeah. late 40s.
Truly yeah, a I joyful time to be a black person in the South, or anywhere. So, fantastic. I have wanted to see Mudbound. I feel like if it was in theaters, I would have seen it long ago. But just because it's on
Netflix.
Here's what you do.
You get the flu, and then you just lay on the couch all day watching movies.
All right. Fantastic. I'm gonna start looking Marta Busbold on this podcast. Surefire. I'll catch something. It may not be the flu though. I'll catch blindness. It'll be like a Twilight Zone.
Oh my God. I don't even think that's possible.
I'll get a rare form of hepatitis that destroys my retinas.
I was going to say, luckily, you've got the CDC, but Trump's probably defunded that, so you're out of luck on that one.
They are in desperate need of new bio-level 4 labs, where all the deadliest stuff is that was in the paper this weekend. So, I don't know. Maybe it's gonna squeak out. Who knows? Proud to say I'll be at Ground Zero, and Movie Club listeners, I'll be sure to give you a running tally of what neighborhoods are infected and what streets to avoid. And then eventually there will be no more broadcasting because it will eventually invade this household. So this is John Kissel, dead from smallpox in around 2 weeks. recommending that you follow us on the internet at MediaComovie.club, Twitter, MediaComovieCal, iTunes reviews, help us reach more people. And if you click on the Amazon link on our site and shop as normal, we get a tiny kickback that helps us to keep the lights on, and while costing you nothing. In the future, at Munich Movie Club, we will be discussing Werner Herzog's documentary about the internet entitled Lo and Behold, Reveries of the Connected World. And if you've never seen a Werner Herzog movie, I gotta say you're in for a treat, because that's a German voice that I could listen to indefinitely.
Of course you could. Man, that was the most John Kissel sentence I've ever heard in my life. Sorry, I couldn't let you finish. It was
available on
funny.
Netflix. Following Lo and Behold, Reveries of the Connected World, we'll be watching Nobody Speak, the documentary about Hulk Hogan's lawsuit, and Audrey and Daisy, which is about a case of high school revenge porn, I want to say. Eventually, I'll figure out what these movies are about, specifically Audrey and Daisy, before plugging them on the podcast. I'll figure it out. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Good night.